Hey, it's Sean Fennessy, host of The Big Picture. Did you just see the latest tentpole blockbuster? Or a surprisingly fun new movie on a streaming service? Or maybe you just want to bone up on the greatest films ever made? From reviews to rankings, career retrospectives to movie drafts, and everything in between, The Big Picture is here for you. Listen to The Big Picture for free on Spotify.
All right, I am here with Adam Sandler.
Yeah.
You're in his office.
Yeah.
In an undisclosed location in the LA area.
Just woke up from a nap.
Is that what happened? Well, yeah, you said you wanted to brush your teeth. I didn't know what was going on.
Well, I brushed my teeth. So what happened was I got up at 6 this morning. I thought I could be strong all day. And then around 10:45, I started going, I think I'm going down for the count.
So old guy crash?
A little 10-minute hit and run. Lay on this thing. It was a couch that was too short for me, so I was in a bad mood the whole sleep.
Well, you had to do a lot of basketball in this Hustle movie, which we should just talk about it now. Because you're playing a scout and you had to do, you're basically trying to, my guy Wancho, who had a cup of coffee with the Celtics, you're trying to bring his character.
Yes.
But you're doing a lot of drill stuff and I was actually impressed by how much basketball you did.
Well, I mean, I all I did was throw passes to Wancho, and then he did all the work.
Great. Right, looked
good. Right on time. I was right. By the way, I can't throw an alley oop. Terrible. I get every time somebody goes throw one up for me, Adam. I go, oh no, and then I see these guys jump. I'm way late. They just stare at me while they're 3 feet up in the air. Like, what happened?
We got to throw it like 3 feet to the side, right?
To the side. Yeah, the time is right, and you can't float it too much, and you kind of be a slightly crisp. But I'm not good at that.
So I think you're in the running now for, we might have talked about this the last time, the sports movie.
Yeah.
What is this, like your fifth?
Well,
Longest Yard.
Okay.
Happy Gilmore.
Bobby Boucher. That's
Waterboy. And then this one, there's not another one. I'm missing, right? So you're four. Four is like Costner territory.
Oh, yeah. By the way, baseball is the only sport that I'm halfway decent at.
It never happened.
I have not played baseball on camera yet. And I was pretty good. Not awesome, but in Little League, I was real good.
You could have done like Bad News Bears 7.
Yeah, I would have definitely taken that part.
Billy Bob did that one. You were remaking Longest Yard, which I forgave you for like 10 years ago.
You know, it was a mistake.
That really hurt my feelings.
Mine too. But the only reason it was going. They were doing it. And it was cool. And I was like, well, if they're doing it, I might as well be in it. But then... compared to the first one, not even close.
Well, it made a ton of money, right?
Ended up doing all right, paid for some things in our house, but...
Well, you got Bert into it. I thought it was important to be happy.
Got to know Bert. The movie's cool. Got to hang out with some amazing people. Friends with Michael Irvin now, so everything's all right.
Chris Rock, he's the Undertaker.
Yeah, that's right.
Caretaker.
Yeah,
not the Undertaker. The Undertaker's a wrestling thing. Then you had some good football players in there.
Incredible.
My whole rule with remakes, and this is why I was offended by The Longest Yard, even though I did enjoy it. Now my son likes it.
Your son likes it.
He would never watch the old one. He would watch yours.
Thank you.
So you win that one. But I just feel like with remakes, if the old one is still super rewatchable.
Yeah, it makes no sense to do it. It made no sense. They were doing it. Everyone was excited.
Well, you got to throw some spirals. You look good as the QB.
Yeah, I could throw a 45-yard pass now. And I don't think I could do that right now, though. The shoulder wouldn't handle that one. But your son likes mine, so everything's all right. I brought him joy.
Old. Well, the old one also starts with Bert punching his girlfriend, which isn't awesome.
That's not
that rewatchable. I always felt like that was the first modern sports movie. Because if you think about it, like that's 1974.
Uh-huh.
You have that. Rollerball the next year with Jimmy Kahn.
The best.
Then you got Rocky and Bad News Bears same year.
My God.
And then it's off. Everybody's just like, all right.
Can't beat those. Can't beat Bad News Bears. Can't beat Rocky. Everything you do in this movie, in Hustle, we were like, well, Rocky, that was Rocky. Rocky did this. Rocky did that. We're set in Philly, so it's all very Rocky. So that's why I made some comment when he ran up the stairs. Wancho runs up these stairs and I had to give him some Rocky love or I'd be an insane person not to.
Well, your Hustle is like this 2020s version of a sports movie. It's like where we've landed because every idea has been done, right?
Yeah,
And we hit that point. Like when you had your renaissance with this, you were in the sports movie renaissance in the 90s when you had Waterboy and Happy Gilmore.
Yeah.
It was like kind of the our generation that grew up with sports movies.
That's cool.
And
yes.
It's like, all right, we're going to, now this is our, these are ours. We're going to do these. We're going to make the, either make them funnier or make them.
Well,
like
when
blue
I did
chips,
it, when
whatever.
I did, well, Blue Chips, that's another great one. And, but, when I did Happy Gilmore, I was so terrified of, not being, you know, like you did Caddyshack was too much. That was the best of the best.
Right.
So when we were doing a golf movie, we were like, we felt so lame. Releasing it, we're like, oh man, Caddyshack, people are going to want to kill us. But it ended up all right. And the best thing about a sports movie that for us is the third act, you kind of build towards some big game. It just makes life easy. You go, all right, we know we got a big game. We don't have to know necessarily how it's going to turn out, but we know we're going to get to a big game.
I texted you where I was watching with my family.
Yes.
On Saturday, I text you halfway through. It's like, you motherfucker, you figured this one out. Another sports movie underdog. Never fails.
You're right. It is an underdog movie. Everybody's an underdog. My guy's a beaten soul. Juancho's character didn't get a shot because his life was holding him back. And it is real, man. It's cool. It's Anthony Edwards and Juancho going at it. It's amazing. There's so many.
Yeah, I have some Anthony Edwards questions.
Yeah.
I think like, from an era standpoint, so we had like that era when you made Happy Gilmore and Waterboy, and so you have that whole era. And then the documentaries come in late 2000s, and then it's like sports movies go to like another level, right? The Moneyball, things
that's
like that,
true.
Where it's like we're not just doing the underdog anymore. If we're gonna do a sports movie, you have to have these wrinkles. There has to be authenticity. You have to
That's true.
You have to bring athletes into it that actually played, and so this movie has a lot of pieces, right? It's like. Yeah. It's a movie about a scout. Like, I don't think they're making that in 1990, right?
Well, they did. They did the baseball scout, right? Albert Brooks played a scout. He found Brendan Fraser,
and that didn't do well.
I don't know if it did well or not. I don't know, but I know it was definitely something that people would. When I would say, "I'm playing a scout," people would bring it up to me. Oh, like the scout, and I'd say, "Oh, we better make sure we don't steal anything from the scout."
I don't think that was an issue.
It wasn't an issue. It was baseball. It was baseball, and Albert Brooks and I are different.
God, I barely remember that one. Yeah, I think what's cool about some of the sports movies now is you can pull these real life people in. Like you have Anthony Edwards in.
Yeah.
I don't even think he's 21 yet. I'm fascinated by him.
Yeah,
and he's like a really good actor. He was kind of a dick in the movie.
Yeah. I mean, him and Juancho are very tight. And so Juancho knew we needed a bad guy in the movie that was messing with Juancho's character. And then Juancho just texted us one day, Jeremiah Zagard's the director, texted us, said, I'm friends with Anthony, we're teammates, and we always go at it on the, when we're practicing and stuff. Does he want to do it? Yeah, he seems like he wants to do it. So then, he just came in, worked on his acting. We had this woman that kind of dealt with all the basketball players and helped them with their lines and what they're thinking and what they're doing and what everything means. And Anthony Edwards got incredible in there. Him and Juancho, pretty damn real.
I think he has it, just in general.
I mean, come on. Yeah, he is one pure funny guy.
He's got like a charisma and a personality. He's got the athletic ability.
Yes.
I'm even talking outside the movie.
Yes.
If you're just targeting like guys under 27 who might be the biggest star in the league, I don't know if it's going to happen for him, but he has a lot of the tools.
He has all the guys loved him too. When we played one day, we had like a week when it was with a lot of the guys from the league were hanging out, and those guys were shooting around, and you can't help it. Anytime Anthony did something, everybody would smile, laugh. He's just ferocious and funny as hell. And
you know
confident.
About his dog, right?
Yeah, yeah.
His dog has a Twitter account that Anthony Edwards runs, and his dog's name is Anthony Edwards Jr.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, man. He's
cool.
He does
these tweets about his dad. Yeah, he's got it, man. I think that guy.
He's
all
a young,
these young
youngster.
Dudes in the league now. There's so many good ones.
This was definitely the year of the youngsters.
Yeah.
This is where you just go, man, there's so many guys who are great right now.
You're still watching a ton, right? Even when you're doing movies, you're still
following
everything.
I watch a lot. I haven't seen every game in the last. I saw the ending the other night with the Celtics and the Heat. I saw the last quarter. I've been that kind of guy where I get to pick and choose. The family sometimes stares at me like, are you kidding me? How long are you going to sit here? It's not like your life where this is your living. This isn't my living. Watching NBA and baseball games and stuff. My family's a little bit disgusted with me.
My family is constantly disgusted with me.
Yeah, but you...
And the it's a living excuse does not really work
anymore. It doesn't work.
Because we hit these points in the sports schedule, you know, like late April where there's you know, eight matchups going on in the first round and it's just, there's games every night. My wife's like, I hate this time of year.
Does she watch with you? I saw her watching the Hustle with you.
She watched Hustle.
She looked,
well, my family's very pro Sandler. I mean, I know you you haven't done bad for yourself in life, but
thank you.
I think there's a rewatchability, especially.
Yeah.
There's some of them that are just, it just feels like they're going to live on and on. I mean, Happy Gilmore now. How old is Happy Gilmore now? Like 27 years?
Exactly. It's been around.
It's just going to keep going. It's like how we thought about Caddyshack and some of those movies.
Yeah. Bad News Bears, Caddyshack, Longest Yard, Slapshot. That got me too.
Did you watch your movies with your kids? Like that? Like when did your kids watch Happy Gilmore?
That's when one of my daughters always says, I don't know if I like that one, Daddy. You're very aggressive. but I think I watched a lot of my movies with them. And I sit there for 20 minutes and then I see either they're loving it or they're, if I see them tune out for it, they kind of stay into it, most of them.
What bombed? What did terribly?
They were Zohan. My ass is out in that one. That I don't think they were thrilled. I think that was the timing. I think it was a sleepover too. I think their friends were over. I walked in. I'm like, oh no, they're watching the Zohan. This was a couple of years ago, and all of a sudden, Daddy's ass is out, and their friends are asleep. But I think that ruined the night. But everything else worked well.
How do you know when you're making a movie? I mean, you've had a lot of ones that worked, but a couple that didn't. Do you know as you're filming it that it might not work, or do you talk yourself into it?
I like them. I like them all while I'm doing them. I believe in them all while I'm doing them.
So you never have doubt, never creeps in? Because I remember my TV show got canceled and, you know, I did, I don't know, like 18 episodes, but I didn't really realize until like the 9th episode, like, oh, I might be in trouble.
Really?
Yeah, I felt like the first ones, I was like, yeah, we're getting, I see like the, you know, because if you're competitive, growing. You're just talking yourselves into the things that you think is working.
Right.
You know?
And plus, there's a reason you're doing it. You believe in it. So if you're believing in something, of course you think. But yeah, I used to know the world. There was, and when my movies would come out in the theaters, there was a thing called tracking, you know, with that. It's like 3.5 weeks before they kind of give you some numbers of what the feel of the world is right now. And I sadly started being able to read that stuff. So like, 3.5 weeks out, I would be like,
"It's like a movie psychic."
It tells you, what kind of numbers you're looking at, what's going to happen, and I would know 3.5 weeks out where it's feeling like it's going to go, and I would have friends go, "Whoa, that thing's going to be huge, man!" Blah blah. And in my head, I'd be like, oh boy, I'm about to disappoint a lot of people. Well, but then the ones that are tracking good, you're like, yeah, baby, you got some confidence.
What was the one out of all of them that you were just like, I know this is going to be a huge hit. People are going to love this.
Well, I literally thought Billy Madison when we first did it and wrote it. And I was like, well, this is going to be the greatest thing of all time because I was a kid.
Yeah.
It's my first one. I knew I'd want to see it. I was like, how did someone not do an elementary school movie? How did this not happen? A grown man in elementary, that we were so just like excited. And then it did fine. It didn't do, wasn't huge.
Yeah.
But it lived on. Right. And so that's kind of great. But I think at that time I was always just like, oh, wait till the Water Boy comes out. They're going to like that. I was very psyched about each one we put up. Now I'm just like, I think this is good. I like it. I'm going to work hard to make it as good as I can. I have no idea where it's going to land. But Hustle, I feel real good about.
Hustle will do very well.
Yeah, Hustle's got a nice vibe to it.
It has something for everybody. I thought it was interesting. In my house, plays.
Yeah, what
that does sound like this is an advertisement for the movie, but you know, we have different people in my house, right? Me and my wife like different things.
Right.
My daughter pretty much likes everything as long as it has a heart. And then my son is the toughest audience of all.
Right.
He's looking for any excuse to be out. He's 14 years old and to be like, ah, that sucks or whatever. So the fact that everybody was kind of into it, I was like, this is a good sign.
That's good.
You're hitting four different demos.
That's big.
Especially me, because I'm always prone to be defensive with sports movies. And
sure. Or also we watch sports movies and go, that guy can't play and blah, blah, blah. And in this movie, you're just like, wow, everybody's pretty damn good.
It's actually, Juancho is so good in the movie that it made me kind of reevaluate. I was like, why isn't this guy a better player? Like, how is he not like a starter?
Juancho, when they screwed around, when the guys would just be playing ball and loose, he's incredible. He hits shots. I think he's just like, he's got possibilities to be awesome.
He should be an absolute stretch for asset for somebody. But this is the problem with the NBA. You can, he bounced around, right? He was in Denver, Minnesota. Yeah. He came to the Celtics, then he gets traded twice this year.
You were all over. You knew what he was doing the whole time when we would text about that. But his...
every time he came in, I'm like Juancho, he's Juancho. In.
But Juancho, when he was in, had some nice moments with Utah.
Yeah.
He felt good. He was his friends. And Jordan Clarkson's in the movie, and Dell Demps, who was an assistant coach on the Jazz. I think that made Juancho feel good too, because he knew those guys. So when he got on the team, he felt comfortable. It must be scary as hell. You land on a new team midseason. You're not sure who's psyched you there, who's not psyched, and you got to start over.
Right. It's almost better to land on a crap team than I think a team like
Utah.
They're kind of a set team already. Did you feel like? Is it easy to get these guys to be in a movie? Like, you have Tobias Harris in this movie, and he's in actual scenes. And
there's
a lot of little cameos from stuff, but do these people, because I always felt like with Entourage, it just seemed like everybody was so delighted to be in Entourage. Like,
over and over again,
and be like, oh, yeah, sure, I'll do a scene. Even like Tom Brady was in Entourage. But is it easy or hard to get those people?
You're shooting in L.A., a lot of guys are like, want a reason to go to L.A. and hang out. So they're like, yeah, I'll do a day on that. But this one we shot in Philly. First of all, the Sixers were so cool to us. They let us use everything they got, all the facilities, all the coaches, everybody, Doc and a lot of the players were in a lot of scenes. And
yeah,
we did stuff in the morning, did stuff at night. We just got to hang with those guys. It's not that easy where you write a part for someone and you guarantee they're going to come, but LeBron and being a part of the movie, everything is...
LeBron's like the stamp of approval because that whole generation idolizes him.
He's great.
Yeah.
He makes the NBA... We made sure anything that had to do with the NBA because LeBron was involved, it just got done. Yeah,
they roll over for that.
Sure.
It's like the same thing with Jordan 25 years ago, right?
Right, yeah.
It's like, LeBron wants to do this. Okay, you do that, LeBron.
Yeah, 100%.
I wonder who'll be the next guy who's like that. Because, at some point it's going to end with LeBron. And I wonder who will be the next guy. Because remember, after MJ left, we had 6-7 years where everybody's kind of vying for the throne.
Right.
Nobody really got it until LeBron went to Miami, basically.
Well, Kobe was pretty...
Kobe was in there, but, right, but he also he missed the playoffs one year.
Right, right.
Tracy McGrady at one point, they were saying him. It was going to be Grant Hill. It was going to be Shaq. And none of those guys ever told it. And then LeBron was the first guy. I was like, this is clearly the guy.
That he started so young.
Yeah.
Started so young. Everybody, we all knew him when he was 14. So that was, that does bring you in a nice light. I don't know, man. There's some greats out there right now, though. There's so many young guys that are ridiculous. What a year this was.
It's a talent boom. We have this, this happens in comedy. This happens in music.
That's true.
You think like even when you were making your first couple movies, I was thinking about like comedies during that era.
Yeah.
What a cool era for comedies it was.
Man.
And you had Farley.
Yeah.
Jim Carrey had 3 movies in 1 year.
Oh, yeah.
Farley Brothers.
Yeah. Yeah.
All of a sudden, there was just this explosion of Myers funny movies. Mike Myers had a whole bunch of them.
Yeah. It was crazy. It was crazy. We all got shots to do our thing. It was kind of like every 2 months, one of us got to have a movie come out. I don't know. Carrie was definitely, he kicked down the doors for us with just being a monster.
What do you have? He had Ace Ventura, Dumb and Dumber, and I think The Mask. In like 10 months.
That was insane. And then he was in Batman.
Right.
And then it was just kind of like, well, he's uncatchable.
cable guy gets paid $20 million. The first time comedies were treated like
He did
big budget movies. Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. What did you make for like Happy Gilmore? Do you remember?
Not that much. I don't remember. But
I
remember
it was like under $1 million.
In that ballpark. I mean, that's pretty good, but for a young idiot. But I do think Happy Gilmore ended up made more money down the line with how much they ran it and stuff. So yeah, I didn't start getting paid big money till actually the Wedding Singer I made pretty good money because the first two did well, Billy and Happy. And so then they gave me some more money than I thought I would ever get.
What was Wedding Singer or Waterboy? Which one was first?
First the Wedding Singer, then the Waterboy.
Yeah. That was when it just seemed like...
That's when everything changed after those two.
I feel like that would have happened for Farley too if he...
Oh, 1,000%.
It just would have been like every year there's a Farley movie and I'm going to go see it.
He'd still be killing. Yeah. He was more lovable than any human being and would be up to do anything you ask him to. As a comedian and a director, all the great directors loved him. I remember when they'd come by Saturday Night Live, it would be like no one else was alive. They'd be staring at Farley like, oh my God, here he comes. He would just dominate.
Well, same thing. Even like somebody like Letterman who interviewed like a cajillion people, right?
Yes.
And there's like every time Farley came on, Letterman was just so delighted.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I know. We would talk about that with Farley. He'd be like, Letterman loves you, man. He'd be like, yeah, he does. Get all shy but cocky.
Who's in your office? I can't remember if we talked about this last time with KG. Who's in the SNL office? Sharing it with?
Me and Rock. And then next to, and it was like, me and Rock are here, and right over there is Spade and Farley. And we hung a lot.
And it's just the four of you guys the wee hours. Yeah, and Farley's just figuring out ways to make you laugh, usually with like nudity or farting.
He didn't fart that much, but he certainly was nude a lot. And then me and Rock, we shared our office, and me and Rock knew each other when we were 17. We lucked out. I don't even know how it all happened that we had the same office, but we were tight.
Was it weird for you and Rock when you have so many different things that's taking off and he's trying to find this niche and he had like Nat X and a couple of, but he wasn't hitting like you were on the show.
I think he was more popular than me on the show. He had a lot more things going on. I was just a writer in the beginning.
Yeah.
And then I slowly weasel my way on there more, but Rock, I think by the time I started really have Rock, by the way, he used to come to the office on a Monday after I did something and be like, Sandler, whatever skit, like the Halloween costumes thing, you know, such as that. He would talk to people and his buddies, he'd be like, that one worked, you know, like he kind of always knew what was happening. And then all of a sudden he would tell you something like, don't do that one again or something like that. They're like, oh, really? Okay. But
so you felt like there was like a big picture savviness to him even way back
Rock,
when.
Rock thought things through. Always was like a teammate. Rock also, I remember when we would have a skit, if you had a good performance where the crowd liked it, I would walk off stage like, all right. And then Rock would come running at me. I'd be like, oh, and he would jump like we were on the Knicks and we'd bump chests and be like, Sandler. Like, he was such a nice guy about it all, always.
That was such a crazy time for the show because you had all these, you know, it was still a cast, but you had all these people that just went on to bigger things from the show.
Yeah,
and then
it
made it seem like that's how it went. If you were on the show, then all these things. And it was just like, actually, no, that's not how it's going to go. It's actually really hard to make it after you leave the show.
A lot of people are doing well and have done well on the show. And the cast now, a lot of funny people popping on that show right now. By the way, Heidi is in Hustle.
She's really good.
Isn't she cool?
Big Chiefs fan.
She's a big, you know how,
it's like a psycho Chiefs fan.
She did this, that Michael Jordan skit. She wrote that skit where he's playing quarters with Michael Jordan and the security guard. They're flipping quarters.
Right.
And I called up someone. I said, who wrote that skit? They said, Heidi, I said, she wrote that, man. That is the best.
Yeah, she's like a legit sports fan.
She really knows the sports.
I've been meaning to have her on the pod. I got to do that. You just reminded me.
She's cool.
I always file stuff away. Like, I have to have that person on, and then I forget.
Yeah, I know. Of course, me too.
Well, the weirdest thing for you now is freaking Herlihy's son is
a monster.
You're like 100 years old. That made me feel old.
Me too,
because we're like around the same age. I was like, really? Herlihy's son's on the show?
Kind of did it in such a cool way to never like Tim would be like, he doesn't talk to me about anything. He just does his own thing. Doesn't want to be known as...
Right. You know, well, for the people listening, so Herlihy was like your longtime guy.
Right. He's still my guy.
SNL. Yeah,
I was just talking to him this morning. He was my college roommate. We wrote all our movies together. We still write our stuff. And then his son, Martin, went to NYU and he was in a comedy troupe and they're on Please Don't Destroy, right?
They make these videos. They're kind of the new version of like the old school Sandberg videos.
So sure. They kind of like, they don't really do music, but they do their own weird and they cut them up great and they
they're good.
And the topics are all weird and they're just great vibe, but they're like the superstars now.
I Googled after the first one. I'm like, who are these guys?
Oh, yeah?
And I was like, Herlihy, that can't be the...
I know.
I was like, oh, he must be the redhead one. But
they look a little alike. But I know Martin when he was a little baby.
Yeah.
And I had no idea that baby was going to be funny.
The thing is, if you're in a house where everybody's funny, I think it does help. There is some osmosis with the comedy, especially if people are crossing lines in your own house, the safety of the house.
Absolutely.
It's going to translate at least a little bit. Like your kids, I bet, would be funny.
They certainly hear me curse a lot. They're going to definitely curse. Last night, I was ripping some curses, and I was like, I think I got to calm down with that.
Yeah.
They're going to be nuts, my kids. But no, they know about comedy.
Yeah.
They know. They laugh at the right jokes, both my daughters. Your daughter, too, right?
My kids, same way. Like, I'm always really proud of what they think is funny, because I'm always like, all right, we did a good job with this.
Yeah, they like the subtle, weird ones, and they... If something's too big, they just kind of stare like, yeah, I've seen that. But they laugh at...
Like, SNL did that thing last year with Chalamet and Pete Davidson, where they were like fake a rap
duo. With the flute?
No, they were doing like this rap, and it just kept yelling, skeet, skeet.
Oh, right, yeah,
it
yeah.
It became
yeah.
this huge thing on TikTok.
Right, yeah.
But I showed that to my kids before it became a thing. Mm-hmm. And they were immediately like, that's amazing. And they watched it like 10 times.
Right,
I was like,
right.
This becomes a thing.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And then it became like a billion.
It's amazing that age. My daughters too, when they like something, I go, oh, that's going to be big, huh?
It's so weird that the kids are the tastemakers from like age 12 to 16.
Yeah.
Whatever they like, they're kind of way ahead of us.
Somebody's
we lose that advantage when they graduate college, right?
We become corny. We're always a beat behind. Somebody just the other day when we were putting music in another movie we produced, and we were like, we got to, you know, come up with the right tunes. And then one guy in the way out goes, whoever's got a little brother around here, ask them. Ask the little brother with the... Yeah.
Yeah, like a 13-year-old. So you're in college with Herlihy.
Yeah.
And you want to be a comic. What does he want to be?
That guy came to be a business. He worked at, where do you work? Goldman Sachs during the summer. And then...
So he thinks he's going financial.
He's all finance. He knows that world. He talks about, I would just stare at him and be like, I don't even know what that means. Anything. I was so dumb.
And you just want to be a stand-up comic. You don't know what you want, but you want to be funny.
I think I know. I wanted to be Eddie Murphy. I wanted to be a superstar. No doubt about it. When I was, it wasn't on my mind until I decided to be a stand-up. And my brother told me, you could be. I was applying to schools, and I said, "What should my major be?" And my brother goes, "You can be a comedian. You're funny like Eddie Murphy, or he maybe even said you're funnier than Eddie Murphy, something like that." And then I went, "Yeah, okay, I'll do that." And then once I started it, then I became obsessed. I was like, oh, I got to get good at this. And that was that.
I think I told you this the last time, but you came to Holy Cross once.
I did,
in college.
That's funny.
And just the classic, like, terrible college stand-up. Although we were much more excited for you than I think maybe the kids are now, but just with, like, how they treat stand-ups now.
Right.
But it was just, like, the big blown out. You know, the field house where we played sports.
Yeah.
They just put the crappy stage up.
Right.
You have to go out. Everybody kind of stands there.
That's right, man.
But it was
I remember
cool.
being we like a good up. Vibe because it was all my New England friends came.
Yeah, well, we were all, you know, you were a New England guy. When you started going on that on SNL, it was like, Yeah, you know, you're always filing that one away. Like, oh.
Yeah. He's from around here. Yeah. I know. And I used to always on purpose try to write stuff that I knew my New England friends would laugh at it, references and stuff like that. And
you could do the accent, which helps.
Exactly.
From a comedy standpoint, a lot that of people helps. Fuck that up.
Yeah. And you get, as a New Englander, you get angry at the Pepperidge Farm guys. You would go like, ah, come on, man. But yeah, Holy Cross, I kind of remember that gig. I don't remember everything, but I do remember that my albums were starting to do well.
Right.
And that was my big, even more than SNL, was my albums when I would get to the colleges. That's what the kids talked to me about.
So when you're doing those albums, did you get that money? Did you have to split it with SNL? How did that work?
I think I split it with them, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's one where I went, I know this is going to be good. I know, like you know how we were saying what movies, you know.
Yeah.
My first album and my second album, they were always saying, no, just do stand-up. They didn't want to do it the way I did it. And I would say like, oh, I'm pretty sure it's going to be cooler this way because I'm Cheech and Chong, man. That's all we listen to.
Yeah.
And they were like, well, maybe you'll get that down the line, but let's just do stand-up. And I think that was like the first time I went, wait a minute, I think I got to stand up for what I want to do a little more. That was like the first time I went, you got to listen to me. They're going to like it better like this.
You kind of have to have that quality if you're going to become really successful because you can just get rolled over by the wrong idea.
Well, the SNL kind of taught you that when as a comedian, you wrote your thing. And then you produced your own piece.
Yeah.
And so you decided what you were wearing and what you could talk to the director about, maybe shoot a three shot instead of that because it gives away the joke if you do that kind of thing. And so then when you leave the show, you have a little bit more confidence of like, it's going to work better if we do it like this when you're in a meeting with people who make stuff.
Or you go like the Mike Myers thing where he's just like a cornerback. And they just leave him alone. It's like, Mike's going to defend the left side of the field. And comes in with a sketch.
I
don't need help from anybody.
That's from the SNL world, I think. Mike could tell you what, but I'm pretty sure. You produce your own stuff. You do it in front of a crowd. And you see it working. So that's when you go to do a movie. You go, oh, wait, let me just make sure we do it the right way. The way I see it.
Was there competitiveness with all the guys afterwards with the movies and stuff, or is everybody just rooted for each other?
At that time, I think after a while, we all became like relaxed with it. And in the beginning, you're just like, you want to do well enough to let them make you another offer to do one. You know, you don't want to have, if yours eats it and someone else's kills, they start going, okay, well, you're done. We'll go with just whoever, someone else. So I'm sure in the beginning, we all had a little, like, we got to get this right.
But everyone's rooting for Farley.
Not a soul can root against Farley. Yeah.
And probably Norm too, right? Probably hoping Norm, Dirty Work makes $200 billion.
You know, Norm, honest to God, everything he did, you didn't root, not root. You just went, he's incredible. You didn't like say, I don't think Norm gave a shit if he did well or not. I remember Norm and Chappelle, they would hang out at the same place I would hang out. The guy, Bob Simons, he produced Billy Madison and Happy and all the ones in the beginning. So then he did Dirty Work and he just did Half Baked and he did all the stuff with those guys. And we'd all see each other at this little place on the Universal lot and all hang out. And we were just like, fuck, they're letting us make movies. This is crazy. We were all mid-20s, you know, low-30s kind of shit. It was amazing.
It's also, I think that era is just over in general with giving young comics or young comedy stars just a chance in a $20 million budget. I guess probably. Like the streamers would do that, but
I think so. I mean,
I don't know. In general, like what is comedy? Like what's happening to comedy over the last 10 years? You know, I think it's so much tougher to even figure out what's funny.
I think they actually do it in the way they want to do it. It's, I don't think they want to make movies like we did and whoever they or goofy movies like we did. They're doing different ways at it. A lot of comedians won't even do straight up comedy parts. They just play you know, real deep parts, and then they go, oh yeah, and I also do stand up, and it's pretty cool. I think it'd be way safer though.
Like, you think like Happy Gilmore, you're making that now, and then there's some backlash because
That's true.
You don't realize you're taking advantage of elementary school. It's an adult. And
Wait a second.
I'm just trying to make a funny movie.
you definitely have to think differently now and smarter and be more aware. And it's good. It's a good thing.
When did you feel like you had fuck you power to make a movie? When was it like, I have this idea and I'm on a run and you guys are going to make this?
I don't think I ever have in my personality a fuck you. Well, I'm always a little scared. I would kind of, when I'm talking to my buddies,
yeah,
be like, fucking tell these motherfuckers. I was more like that talking to my buddies. And then the closer I got to the building and saw the guys in a room like this in suits, I'd be like, first of all, how you doing? You know, like I just get chicken every time. But on occasion,
But it must have been like late 90s, right? Like you're going to pitch Big Daddy and you're going to be able to make it.
That one they pitched me. But if I believed in one, I would definitely get riled up about it. I'd call up whoever says yes or no and just say, here's why it's good, blah, blah, blah. Let's do that. And most of the time I was right. I had a couple that lost some money, so they went, calm down with your crazy attitude of saying what's great. But most of the time, they let me do my thing.
Well, you're pretty proven commodity after a while.
I did.
I mean, it's good. Pretty safe bet.
Good batting average back then.
Good batting average.
Yes. Very, very good.
When did you decide to do the production company thing? And did like somebody explain that to you, that there was more value in doing it that way?
You know, I don't even think about it. It's not that much more money in your life. It's a lot more time in my life. By the way, the good news is a lot of people that I know that work at the company,
people that did it though. You should give yourself some credit.
I did. It was cool. I think I did it mostly because I worked hard. I knew kind of what I was doing.
Yeah.
And my friends were all wanting to do it too. So I kind of was like, here, let's get you going. You know, I was more like I had the opportunity to open doors for some other people, and then we just did it together. And I like that it's Happy Madison. I like that my dad's at the beginning of every movie. I see him. It makes me feel good to do as many things as we did. We only have done 90% goofy comedies. I like doing that stuff. It makes me feel good.
So, like you didn't do like the Handmaid's Tale.
No.
You didn't go that direction. Dark dramas.
I would if somebody wanted. But I'm usually more confident in the comedy tone. Like I just did this really cool movie. It's called Spaceman, and Johan Rank, he directed it, and he did Chernobyl, right?
Yeah.
So he's awesome.
Excellent.
He's like incredible director, and then. When I have had opinions on the script, on my acting, on the cut, I always say something, but then I go, but you know what? You do your thing, man, because I don't really know exactly what I'm talking about in this world. I'm not that confident, but with comedy, I will be more like, you got to fucking lose that scene, man. That's ruining this. And I can be very cocky with that.
What do you think is the best start to finish comedy you made? Like, what's the one that you feel? I'm sure you never don't feel like any of them are perfect, but the one you just feel like check the most boxes.
I don't know. I like when I'm making them. I think they all are, but like we loved when we were making That's My Boy. We were very excited. That felt very New England. That felt like when my brother would stop by the set and he'd watch it and be like, holy shit, that's so funny. That's like so-and-so in our town. Yeah. I'd be like, you know what I mean? That felt as true to growing up in New England that I did. But I don't know. I really don't sit
I think that's
and watch
the right it. Answer. If you don't, you like pieces of different ones.
Yeah, I do. I like some, I go, fuck, let's go. Move on to the next scene already. What are we doing here? I look back at some like that. But most of the time, I'm happy.
You worked with PTA pretty early.
Yes.
Kind of turned into a decent director.
He did okay.
Things were going okay for that
That's
guy.
That's funny.
He did like his third movie or his fourth movie?
Third or fourth movie. He did Boogie Nights, Magnolia. He did Heartache. Yeah. Before that.
Yeah, so
and so forth.
You just went away with him, or who'd you go away with?
I went away with PTA's daughter. We went on a little trip, and while she was just any minute I could, I'd say, "Your father does this a lot," and she would laugh, or whatever it was. I like making fun of her daddy, but he's a sweetheart. You meet him ever?
We've done two podcasts with him, and they were great.
He's a cool bastard.
Really like a student of the game.
He is. He likes his sports. He likes his Dodgers and Red Sox. He's allowed to like two, apparently. I never knew. No.
Oh, so he's a sports bigamist.
You're not allowed to do that, but I think it's because his father's New England. He gives himself the Red Sox, too.
I don't like the two-team thing.
You can't do that, right?
Hey, baseball's
the
only one.
I did with the Mets as a kid.
Well, different leagues are okay, I guess.
Yeah.
Still, at some point, they're going to play. Could happen. Then what do you do?
Well, apparently he just lives with it, and he's allowed to hate the Yankees and like the, I don't know, whatever he does. But he's a great.
What a weirdo that PTA is. what did you learn from him when you did a PTA movie? Anything?
Certainly, man, he thought differently than I did. He's just very, I never made a movie like that. I watched him do his thing. By the way, when I do a movie like that, like I did for Paul, I just give myself to those guys. Whatever you want me to do, I'll do.
Yeah.
And whatever you think is right, then I'll have my opinions. But if you say, no, I go, okay, let's move on. But and that's kind of, I learned to be that kind of teammate with him. But just watching him work was different than anything I've ever seen. Just so many cool moves, dolly moves. I would walk over to the, if I remember correctly, he'd be watching a playback of what you just did, headphones on, and he'd be kind of going, like doing some thing that he was like, had the score already in his head, like what he wanted the sounds to be. And he just saw what he had the vision of what it was going to be.
And he's like one of those psycho attention to detail guys.
Like, oh, yes.
The water bottle shouldn't be there. It should be there.
Oh, it's like, wait, frame, what? He frames his shit cooler than everybody. Yeah, he's just so sharp. By the way, did he tell you I went to his house one time? I don't remember exactly the age, but it might have been first grade or something. He had something written. I want to be the greatest director in the world or something like that.
When he was like seven?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I go, director you picked? He goes, yeah, I knew I wanted to do that. I was like, you didn't want to be like a superstar? You'd be like, no, I wanted to be a director, man.
I think Spielberg was like that.
Is that right?
Or just like, I think the truly great directors, they just, things come out of their eyeballs differently. Like they see a room and they just see the movie shot for it. It's like,
yeah.
You know, and I think either they have it or you don't.
He is such a, just a normal dude hanging out, and he happens to be a genius. Like, you'd have no idea he knows as much as he knows. He just seems just like a goofy, sweetheart when we talk, right? Just
and you normal. Know his, you know, his dad, right?
Yeah.
That his dad was the ABC guy?
Yeah.
Someone's killing hookers. Dan Tan has got a partner. Next on Vegas.
On the Love Boat.
Little Fantasy Island.
Yeah, that's pretty cool, man.
Amazing. That guy was an icon when
and
we were
kids.
And
he was funny as shit, too. He was a comic, too. He was like had his own show in, I think, Ohio or something.
Yeah.
And by the way, can I show you this bruise?
Yeah. Have you ever seen? Jesus, what the hell is that?
I think I got hit by a golf cart the other day. I think that's what caused it. Something happened. My daughter's friends were driving by and a golf cart nicked mine. And I went, did I just get
did
hurt?
Did I just dislocate my elbow? What'd you learn from the Safdies? Couple of maniacs.
Yeah. They never want to do anything they've seen before. They never want to do anything that doesn't feel that it could be real.
Yeah.
If they're very like bullshit detectors every 5 seconds. They're like, no, you can't do that. No. He wouldn't say that. Like they are all over every word, every move, story wise, wanting that they're just hard work and sharp guys. They love movies. They love old movies, new movies. They're open to everything. PTA and those guys got tight now. They're really, really close.
Benny was in the last one.
Yeah. And you know, Licorice Pizza. Yep.
The last time we did this, the movie hadn't come out yet and we couldn't talk about the ending, which I still won't spoil if nobody's seen it. But what was it like for people in your life? Like,
People who
for the ending.
Yeah.
Like were people like, what the fuck, dude? What are you doing? Like, what happened?
Yeah. A lot of that. A lot of people going, some people in the first couple of weeks just going, wait a minute, man, that ending, man. I got that on the street a few times. Like, that ending was a little much, man. Then I had some people go, that's the only way out for Howard, man. That had to happen. Or
you know what? The movie came out 2 years ago. We can spoil it. You get shot in the head at the end.
Get shot in the head.
And is that the first time you died in a movie?
Yeah. I think so.
I think that was part of the shock. It's like they just killed Sandler.
That's right.
Sandler lives in every movie.
I know, man. And then they show me dead for a while. That was cool. It was cool. My kids still haven't seen that one. I always say that to them. They're like, can we watch Uncut Gems? I'm like,
yeah,
that's a tough ending. Show that you one don't want to see either. That one. Right? Right. Yeah.
Just watch, just go with it again. Just put it on again. That I told you this. Well, we didn't talk about this on a pod though.
Safdie's helped a lot on Hustle.
Oh, really? I'm not surprised.
Yeah. They helped on the script a lot. All the guys, the whole gang.
So we taped with KG. It was like December before the pandemic.
Yes.
And then the pandemic happened like 10 weeks later. I think it was one of the last podcasts I did in person.
Uh-huh.
But it was interesting during the pandemic. You've made a couple movies where you get to go away.
Yeah, location. That's true.
And in the pandemic, they became... My daughter would always be like, let's watch a movie that's set in Hawaii. We're like, all right, well, we could watch Just Go With It again. But we would get to go to a place for 2 hours instead of just being stuck in our house, like being afraid to go to the grocery store.
Yeah.
But it was funny, like a couple of those, it's almost like Netflix should have had a you get to go away section on there.
That's so true.
You know what I mean?
Growing up, you see a movie. By the way, when I was growing up in New England, I'd see a movie in California. I had no idea. You were just like, it's incredible out there.
Oh, holy cow. Remember Battle of the Network Stars?
Oh, my God, yes.
Like, where is this place exist?
Where did they shoot that? At Pepperdine?
Yeah.
Unbelievable, dude. That show was my favorite. What's Robert Conrad?
And Gabe Kaplan.
And Gabe Kaplan was a great jock.
I wrote a whole column about that for ESPN, the magazine once, about how I thought that was the greatest sports moment that nobody talks about.
Gabe
Kaplan beating Conrad at the 100-yard dash.
He did?
Yeah.
That's incredible. That must have made Conrad furious.
It's on YouTube. It's great. Yeah, it's
Fast Break, another good movie.
Great one.
Yeah.
That was one... I mean, this guy in Hustle feels like a little bit...
Absolutely.
Gabe Kaplan-y. Absolutely. Fast Break. Yeah.
Absolutely, man. That movie was awesome. I loved that movie as a kid. Watched it over and over.
It was one of my three favorite movies.
Really?
As a kid. Now it's like, I think it might be the most inappropriate sports movie ever made.
Oh, yeah, I haven't seen it in years. I have no idea.
But it has like that iconic Bernard King performance.
Bernard King's in it.
Where he's like really, really good and believable. It was one of the only times they figured it out.
He's in love with the girl who...
That was the other guy. The other guy's in love with Swish, dressed up as a guy. Yeah.
Oh my God,
that wouldn't play either.
Yeah.
That's Kimmel's favorite movie. That was one of the things we bonded about. Yeah, Fast Break.
So cool, man.
But the thing is, we all watched the same shit because we were all, it was the 70s. What else were we going to... We watched
And it would be on TV.
Yeah.
Fast Break would come on once or twice a year, and you're just like, I'm watching this. This is pretty amazing.
That's what's happened with sports movies, I think, because there's so much sports on now. I think it's harder to hit with a sports movie. We just did a podcast about Rocky III and on rewatchables. We were talking about when this came out, it was like a big deal. We didn't have 1982. There wasn't a lot of sports on.
You got to watch
your local teams.
Yeah, that's it.
There was two games on Sunday for football.
Right.
Wrestling, baseball.
Watch a lot of wrestling.
Yeah, wrestling on Saturdays. So Rocky's going to fight Clubber.
Yeah, that was tremendous.
It's like, oh my God, I got to go to the theater and see this.
Couldn't believe it. And how cool Rocky was. How cool Apollo Creed was.
Oh my, Apollo becomes a good guy. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a good move. That was great.
Clubber Lang, great villain.
Mickey was insane.
Mickey dies.
That's terrible. But I'll tell you, by the way, KG's coming right now.
Right.
I think I hear KG out on the other side. Yeah, be careful. No, you got time. KG's doesn't rush anybody.
Cage is early. He's habitual. He's always on time. He's ready to roll.
He's got to make it happen. I'm hearing it. I'm seeing through a silhouette of KG. It's kind of like just a badass outside. But what were we talking about?
We're talking about fast break and sports movies.
Oh, and Rocky and Mickey. And yeah. I was saying every time in this movie with Wancho, when I'm giving him encouragement and trying to give him a shit, I'm just like, come on, man. I can't do it as good as Mickey. Mickey right. was so real. Everything, every bit of advice you gave, it was so like you felt a guy who was in a gym every day of his life for 70 years. When I was saying that, I was just like, all right, I've been in a few basketball gyms. I think I'm kind of entitled to this, but it didn't feel like Mickey entitled.
What's your pickup basketball? How are we looking these days now that you're
it's
old?
It's been a rough one for me. The groin.
You retired yet?
I'm coming back. I have to come, but I haven't been playing. I played horse a little bit last week and that was hurting.
What about full court is done?
I'm coming back. I just, when we were making this movie,
you got the bug.
I know that my damn groin, I popped my groin or something and it's never been perfect again. I have been a hard time. They say I did it golfing.
Really?
Swinging too much. You plant your foot, you turn, and that sucks, man. I don't even know, but I'll be back.
I thought you would be done at this point.
When I would be playing with these guys and these kids would say, how old are you? And I'd say 55. They'd be like, whoa. I didn't know you were that
impressive.
Old, man.
Yeah.
That was pretty good.
The last time I really played a lot was my early 40s, and they were always impressed because we'd go play early at USC. 40s.
Uh-huh.
They'd be like, you know, they'd go, oh, I'll take this guy. I won't have to.
Right, right, right.
Like, oh, yeah, no, man. This is more of a pain in the ass than I thought.
That's right. But yeah, that is good.
I lost it, though. By 43, I was.
What was hurting? 43, why'd you 44. Quit?
I just felt things starting to go, right? Yeah. You're like a split second late
on
stuff.
Slow. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like there would be, I remember there was one time I was playing, there was this rebound and I saw it and I couldn't, and I was just watching the ball go by me and then somebody jumped.
Oh my God.
And I was
God.
Like in a movie watching the rebound.
Right,
versus
right.
like just, there's rebound, I'll get it.
That's so true.
And that was when I was like, I don't know if I can do this anymore.
I think I kind of always had that where I'd see a ball up, I'd be like, let me get that. And somebody would just out jump me, rip it out. I'd be like, what the hell?
Well, the fun thing for playing when I got old was, you have so much like native basketball intelligence, right? Seen everything and you can be in these pickup games and you could just be like, all right, I figured out this guy. He only goes right. All right.
Right.
Now I'll just play him right. So you could cheat with all these things that make up for how old you were.
That's
you
know? True. Yes. And plus when you're older, they let you get a little handsy
grab
his shirts and stuff. Yeah. Like, calm down, man. Yeah.
What keeps you going with just making movies? Like, does your family get mad? Does your wife give you shit?
That I do it too much or that?
Yeah, like why haven't you scaled back yet? You've been making movies for 30 years. When's enough?
They're pretty good on it. They kind of like, the kids will be like, what's the next one?
Oh, they're where just used going? To it.
They feel all right with it. That's what I do. And they also, I think when I'm not doing it, I'm kind of a psycho sitting at home and getting in bad moods and not knowing what to do with my time. Especially with this new groin, I can't play hoop. Right. They're just like, get him out of here. He's in a bad mood.
So they like it when you're busy. That's how my family is.
Yeah, right. They think they miss me. And then when I'm home for a couple of days, they start going, you know, like
that kind of sucks.
That is kind of ornery. But they like, I'm home at night. I come home at night. I hit run my house. My office is like 5 minutes from my house.
Yeah.
So I just randomly come home and hang out for a half hour, then get back to work.
How old are the kids now?
13 and 16. Your daughter's what?
Yeah, I'm 17 and 14. Yeah, we're pretty close.
Got it. So yeah.
So the 16, they
16 is not talking to me as much.
Yeah, it's rough.
Yeah, it hurts, right?
It's a big ego hit, yeah.
Because I literally love this kid more than anything on the planet. She loves me too, but she's not dying for me to enter the bedroom.
It's really depressing, isn't it?
Yeah.
You go in and like, hey, how was school today? It was fine. I'm just asking how school was.
That was my morning this morning. I came in, I said, hey kid, good morning. She goes, hi, can you shut the door? And I go, yeah.
What time are you going to be back? Dad, I told you, I'll be back at 10. I'm just asking. Do you have like the Life 360 where you can track them?
I don't. That's all my buddies have
Life 360.
That's a good move. Huh?
I like to know where my kids are.
That's good. I know, me too. Me too.
Especially when they drive. Is your kid driving yet? The older one?
She gets it in a month. Gets the license.
Be ready for that.
That breaks
your
heart
out. They just want to get out.
They just go places. Yeah. Where does your daughter go?
Anywhere.
And you track it and go, she's on 17th Street right now?
Yeah. I mean, she has some sports stuff. So they'll be like, I'm going to practice. So be like, all right, did she make it to practice?
Right. That makes sense.
Like, I'm going to my friend Paige's house. Like, all right. Oh, she got to Paige's house. And I don't know if that ever...
Her podcast is awesome, though, buddy. I told you.
Oh, thanks.
Love it.
I wish she did it more. She gets...
How many has she done so far?
She hasn't done one in a couple months. She's threatening to do like a Stranger Things thing.
Oh, she should.
I know, because
she's perfect.
I know
in
your house that was probably
it was this last weekend. There was they watched every moment of it.
That was it. You were like the king of Netflix until Stranger Things.
Hey, listen, man.
You had a good run.
Listen, man, you make Stranger Things movies, then we'll talk. That's just some TV shit, man.
Well, I heard that last season, because they split it up.
They're long episodes.
I heard it's like 2+ hours.
They're incredible. That show is awesome. And Levy's part of it. You know Sean Levy?
Yeah.
He's a great guy. And yeah, that show's, that dominates my house for sure.
They did a nice job of building up the stuff for the kids, but also having stuff for people like us.
Yeah.
It's like, Winona Ryder.
Winona's cool.
People from our era.
Absolutely.
So for the parents, we can still.
Did your daughter go see Olivia Rodrigo last week?
She didn't go.
She didn't go because.
Didn't go.
But she's ready to review the next album when it comes out, right?
Yeah, we're a little concerned about the second album.
It's a hard one to follow, but I think the kids are going to do it.
Second albums are tough.
Second album's a pain in the ass because I remember Billy Madison was such a big deal to a certain amount of kids. That when we were doing Happy Gilmore again, the Caddyshack thing, and then we kept going, it's not as weird as Billy. They're going to be mad at us. Like you do overthink shit on your second one.
People are more suspicious because they loved what you did the first time.
Yeah, and then any move you make, they could say, "What? I thought you got me, man. You don't." You know,
right. Well, you also, because you always had to go back and forth with the comedy, but then occasionally you do the drama or I thought you always, I like some of the risks you took.
I think
comics have issues sometimes with, they can't break out of it. Right. You know, where it'll be like, well, I don't want to see you in this dramatic thing. I'm used to you just making me laugh.
And right.
I think people, your drama Sandler, I think is people are used to that.
They're used to it by now. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think many comedians, I had Paul Thomas Anderson wrote me a movie. So that's a pretty good place to be. I think most comedians who would do serious stuff will handle it or could handle it, or it's just lucking out who's putting it together.
One of the things with you is the impact on the Jewish community.
Yes.
Juliet Littman, who's one of our inner circle ringer people, she's always felt like that was the most underrated Sandler piece, like that you would take care, because she always feels like there's not enough content in general.
Yeah.
Like the Hanukkah song.
Right, yeah.
But also just in general, you're...
Being I'm aware that I'm a Jew. I think that...
No, that just from some of the comedy stuff that is untapped, you're willing to go there.
I definitely grew up where I'd be excited when a comedian would talk about being Jewish or an actor would say they're Jewish or say they're Jewish in a movie or whatever it was. It was exciting. So it was on my mind in the beginning of my career. Just I wanted to just not ever hold back talking about being a Jew.
But then the Hanukkah song happens, and that becomes the iconic.
That's the Jewish thing. It was a good one. And then I did 8 crazy nights at comedy.
Yeah.
Like I just always wanted to do stuff like that. Just I didn't want to. I don't know enough about being Jewish and the religion to get too deep into it.
Yeah.
But I always wanted to make sure I was proud.
We've always joked about having a podcast called Jewish Stuff and that Juliet was going to host. And we were always like, what would be on Jewish Stuff? And she had, we just never did it. But we always thought, oh man, this would crush. People would listen to this.
Mm-hmm.
But we never knew it would be on like past like 20 episodes.
Yeah, you can only go so far. That's funny, man.
All right, so Hustle's coming out.
Yes.
What's your next thing after this?
I did a movie called Spaceman. I did that. I did an animated movie with Robert Smigel. You know him?
Yeah.
He's a legend. He's a legend, and he's directing it with a couple other great guys, and we wrote that, and this other guy, Paul Sato, wrote that with us, and and Bill Burr's in that. It's me and Bill Burr play class pets. I'm a lizard, and Bill's a turtle, and it's a good animated movie. It's coming along.
And then you got 50th anniversary of SNL in a couple years.
I'm going to show up to that.
God only knows what kind of festival that's going to be.
I remember the last one was fun. What was the last one? 40th anniversary
last
show?
One was 40, which Eddie showed up at, which was a big deal to me personally.
That's right. Eddie was
that
cool.
Was when they felt like that was the gateway to him hosting. I think that was such an important day.
That was. You're right. Yeah, that was big. And then there's going to be even better this 50th because there's more people who have been on the show and more people showing up.
How about the fact that the show's going to be 50?
It's fucking amazing.
I never knew that you wanted to come back. That was one of like a revelation from like 2 years ago or whenever you were doing Uncut Gems, or I forget that. You would have come back for that last year, but they basically said, no, you're not coming back.
Well, you know, I don't know if I wanted to come back, but I didn't have that opportunity to make that decision. They were kind of
right.
Like,
they removed the choice from you. That was kind of insane.
It was for the best. I'm glad they did it, but
yeah,
it wasn't, I don't even remember. I don't remember who did it, who the people there were who that made that decision, but it was just kind of,
the show was in flux at that point.
Yeah, we were there long enough. We were there. I'm baffled how long a lot of the people are on the show now, but they're still fun to see.
Yeah.
You don't go like, all right, how long are you going to be? You're kind of like, I feel comfortable watching this person be funny.
Yeah. I always thought it should be 4 or 5 years and you're out.
I think I was 3 or 4.
Yeah.
And Farley was what? 4? Yeah. About that.
Farley's 4 counted for like 14 though.
Yeah. He was a tank, man. He came and wrecked things.
When did you reconcile that he wasn't around anymore? It must have been like for like 5 years after you were like, wow, that guy, oh, he's done.
Ah, man. I remember getting the call. I remember I was in my house and picking up the phone, and it was Brad Gray, who also he passed away. He was Farley's manager. They kind of managed that. Brillstein Gray managed a lot of us, right? And Brad, we were right. I think we were writing The Wedding Singer or something, or Big Daddy or something like that. Anyways, I walked to the phone. Hello, and Brad goes, "Oh man, I got bad news. What happened?" And then he told me Farley, and I just remember being like, "Oh fuck, that's fucking horrible." And I thought of his family and his mom and the dad and his brothers and sister and blah blah blah. So of course, I don't remember how long it took for me to, you know, when I talked to Spade or Schneider or other comedians, Tim Meadows, that we all loved them, we were allowed to talk about it out loud and feel comfortable telling stories and laughing.
Yeah.
With those guys pretty quick. But outside of that, I don't remember feeling that able to talk about it for a couple of years.
And then Norm recently.
Man, that was...
I haven't been able to watch the stand-up yet. I love that guy. Because Netflix just put it up.
It's funny as hell.
You liked it?
Yeah. Yes. It's very funny and very sweet and demented.
It
was like traveling around with Norm. We did this tour a couple of years ago when we were together all the time. And he had that secret going on that none of us knew, but it still was funny as shit being with him, and by far the fucking funniest, craziest bastard, you know, and smartest fucking guy knew every historic everything, knew his sports incredible.
Yeah, he was a legitimate degenerate.
He was a degenerate. Yeah. Yes,
he really was, times. Especially golf. What was interesting about him was
he could tweeting away.
You could put him in a room with like 7-8 people, and for some reason would just become the center of the room.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's funny.
I remember one time Kimmel and I went to see him when he was doing his show, and Sal was there. We had all these funny people, but it just something about him. He just became the center force. He could hold court. It was like you were on his podcast.
And he was very generous with giving out compliments to the people he liked and like, But
we had this deadpan thing that was just so unusual. You just never got used to it.
Right.
Kind of like be sizing you up and then all of a sudden he'd make the joke 2 seconds after you thought he was going to make it.
That's funny, man.
You're always like on your toes.
Kind of a fucking sweetheart though, too, with like being a gentleman. And like when he would talk to my mom and dad, he would always kind of like stay with them longer than most, you know? Hey, Mr. Sandler, like, he would just shoot this shit with my dad. They'd sit and talk. And with my mom, he was so sweet. He's just like very cared about his parents a lot.
And Super Dave was like that too. He had the same kind of energy.
Uh-huh.
Where you just, for some reason, he would just become the center of whatever the conversation was. Well,
it seems people who don't give a fuck, you kind of go like, hey, let me hang out with that guy. How do you get like
that? It's like
that?
A little light in their eyes.
Yeah.
Where you're like, what's this? All right, we're wrapping up. Hustle.
All right,
available
brother.
Theaters?
No, maybe a few theaters.
Because
it's on
a theater.
Yeah, I saw that.
I saw it in the Palisades.
Some theaters, but mostly on
Netflix.
June 8th, Netflix. But I was going to tell you, Bill, you know what's funny? Colin Quinn. He's, you know Colin at all?
Yeah.
He's one of the funniest guys. Every comedian loves him. And that when we did Grown Ups, Colin and Norm had a lot of time off together if they weren't shooting, and they just hung out all the time. And Spade sometimes would be with them, and they would just, like, I talked to Colin, he said, that was like one of the best summers of my life, just being with Norm every day in Boston at a coffee shop, just shooting the shit and watching Norm be Norm the whole time.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's the cool, I mean, you made two grown-ups. I don't think you realized how iconic they would be for kids. Did you?
I knew that it would be something I would like to see as a kid.
Yeah.
To see a fucking getaway lake weekend and hanging out and parents being funny and kids being, you know, excited that their parents were fucking nuts. And I knew it would connect us. I didn't know when I walked down the street, now I would hear about it so much. Just like Happy. You don't know how long it's going to last. Yeah, it's cool.
I mean, in the Chris Rock basketball stuff, I don't know. I just wanted more. Maybe it's just to have him set more picks. Just clear it out.
Rock never liked any of those moments being on a basketball court.
Kevin James was like kind of athletic, though.
He's an athlete for sure. Basketball wasn't his game, but he certainly could play.
He could cheat it. Yeah.
He could cheat it. Actually, we played a few 3-on-3s with Kevin, and when there was a loose ball, it was fucking terrifying how quick he would go, get low, dive for it. We're like, we're not dive for balls at this age, man.
Yeah, that's the guy that takes out your ACLs.
Yeah.
All right, good luck with Hustle. And good luck to my Celtics, because we're taping this day before game one.
I think this is happening for you guys. That's quite a defense.
You think this is happening for us?
I know everyone is picking the Warriors.
They really
and
are.
Pick
I was
the
surprised.
Warriors, but that role they're on, have the fact that they win on the fucking road so much, the Celtics, they're crazy. That defense is crazy. Granted, the Warriors do, everywhere you go, you're like, well, he can fucking hit that.
Right.
He can hit from everywhere. There's so many guys that can hit.
Yeah.
That is quite a fucking team you're playing. But Celtics are pretty ferocious, man. Good luck.
It's weird when I don't feel like home court matters in either arena.
Kind
because both teams are just good on the road.
Yes.
So, yeah, that's going to happen. Thank you. Thank you for doing this. Good to see you.
Great to see you, Bill.
Okay.
Thank you.